Welcome to another episode of Cattlecast, presented by Capital Area District Libraries. It's the podcast that provides a nice mix of information and entertainment. Here's your host, Mark Bozita.
Hello, I'm Mark Bozita, Library Assistant at Cattle's Downtown Lansing Branch, along with Trenton Smiley at the controls. As a new school year is underway, it gets many of us thinking about our school days, favorite teachers, maybe even activities like band, sports, plays, and of course, the inevitable homework. Today we go back to the books and we'll talk with Jean Boley, head of Cattle's Foster Branch, as she shares some tips about raising readers. Courtney Tang, Cattle's digital literacy librarian, will be here with some information about Cattle's free digital resources to help learners of all ages. Jolie Hamlin will join us to talk about some of Cattle's great fall programming and the return of Capital Area Reads. We'll visit with Christy Schichtel from MSU's Center for Service Learning and Civic Engagement about tutoring and homework help resources available to students through Cattle. And Jessica Trotter talks with professional Beatles scholar Aaron Kurdovich. It's all coming up right here on Cattlecast.
Check out Cattle's Fall Fest with Tonks and the Aurors, wizard rock inspired by Harry Potter. The fun begins at 6 p.m. on Friday, September 29th at McCormick Park in Williamston. All ages welcome to enjoy music, food, crafts, and giveaways. See you there.
Welcome back. We're here with Courtney Tang, Cattle's digital literacy librarian. Hey, Courtney.
Hi there.
Welcome. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, I'm from Michigan, and I really like to live here, even though the weather's not awesome.
And not consistent either.
Not
right?
consistent. Yeah. It's consistently not awesome.
Right.
I have a lot of hobbies. I like to scrapbook and I play video games. I like to read, of course. Mm-hmm. I like to read fantasy and romance. Yeah, that's basically me.
Okay. Well, and what is a digital literacy librarian? That's a pretty fancy title.
Yeah, it's a little, people don't normally know what it means, but basically my job is to help people interact with technology mm-hmm. and gain basic skills with technology. So that means a lot of things. I help people learn about our digital resources and how to use them. And then I also help people, like I said, with basic computer skills. So I often go out to like senior centers and assisted living centers and teach basic computer skills classes or using the internet. I help people one-on-one learn how to use their own mobile devices or if they're having problems with their laptops and to use our digital downloads, things mm-hmm. like that. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, and Cattle's educational resources are always expanding and
yes,
and
there's
changing
quite a lot.
Too. Yeah. So can you just give us a little bit of an idea of some of the various educational resources that Cattle offers?
Sure. We have quite a few, so I'll just bring up a couple of them.
Yeah.
One of them I want to highlight is called Learning Express.
Mm-hmm.
So this resource is kind of built of several centers or modules, and they have things like adult learning, there's a career center, high school equivalency, college prep. So there are also modules for like college and grade school level users.
Something for every all
there's,
ages.
Though. I mean, there's they those things do things like test prep and academic skills, but there's also a Spanish language center, and that one's it's not for those learning Spanish; it's in Spanish. So it's for Spanish speakers who want to do things like academic improvement, get their GED, or study for citizenship testing, things like that. So it does have an incredibly wide range of these modules.
Mm-hmm.
For really, if you're at any place in your
right.
educational journey.
Right. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
From elementary all the way up.
Yeah.
So that's,
yeah.
That's really cool.
It's pretty, it's very robust.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. And speaking of Spanish, we also have a free resource for language learners. So that's called Pronunciator.
Mm-hmm.
Pronunciator has, I think you can learn 80 languages all for free. But aside from that, you can learn a language in another language. So let's
okay.
say that you speak Japanese and you want to learn French. You can learn French in Japanese. It's not just for people. It's not just for English language speakers learning languages. It's for anyone who wants to learn a language. You can also learn English with pronunciators. So.
And so you don't have to have any background.
You can start if you have some background. You can start from wherever that is. There's the ability to choose which module you start from. But you can start from like basic. I know nothing. But it also just works in browser. So there's an option for anyone really.
And with something like that, you can also go at your own pace too. It's not like if you were taking a course where you have to have chapter.
And you can skip around if you want. Like if something seems more interesting, you can kind of skip to that. It's really flexible.
So, very nice.
Yeah, that one's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Another thing we have is Britannica School. This is more of a traditional database, what you think of when you think of that kind of thing. But it's still, regardless, I think it's quite invaluable because it's split up by school level. So there's one for elementary, one for middle, and one for high school. And what I really like about this is it's very practical. Okay. So for younger students, for example, it has things like access to pictures and videos and even like educational games. Okay. And then as you progress, it gets a little more in-depth and difficult. So for high school students, for example, it has things like to help you with research papers. It also has like multimedia to put into your presentations. What I like about this one is just it has so many practical applications. It's not, it provides information, but it helps students to produce things, I guess.
And can you break it down by not even just by grade level, but by subject within that?
Yeah, of course, it's completely searchable. So, you can get really specific.
Okay, nice.
Another one that I kind of want to highlight, which I think has very broad appeal. A lot of people, I think, have heard of our service Hoopla.
Right.
What we got, music, videos, TV, audiobooks, ebooks, comics. Within that, we also have access to the great courses. And I think a lot of people know what that is. But for those who, they're educational videos that have a wide variety of subjects. I mean, huge. There's cooking, my favorite, astrophysics, public speaking. What was one I saw? How to grow trees and shrubs. The greatest churches in the world. So like things for architectural, historically inclined people, yoga, business skills. It's really, there's 109 of them.
Okay.
So anything you might want to learn about, you can learn about. And it's for people, school grade kids can use this, of course, if they want to enhance what they're learning or as another resource. But I think it's really targeted toward lifelong learners.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who's a lifelong learner myself, I think it's really, it's important to have access to resources like that.
Right.
And the great courses are like well established. They vet their lecturers quite well. It's, it's very robust. It has a good reputation, I guess. And we have access to that through Hoopla, so.
Yeah, and it's all, again, part of the free service. Right into that.
Or if, you used to like to watch, like me, when I was little, I loved watching shows about ancient Egypt on the History Channel.
Uh-huh.
And, I don't even have TV anymore, so it's kind of like, I can get that back.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of things like that. And even our service, lynda.com.
Yes.
Which also has a lot of educational videos and stuff, too. That's another big one.
Lynda is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of hobbies. I think I told you.
Right.
So I'm always like going to YouTube to learn things. And not just for my hobbies, but whenever I have a problem with like a computer program and I don't know how to do it, it's usually fastest for me to just find a video on it. Like I'm a very visual learner and I like to see someone walk me through something. Lynda is like that, but better. It has entire courses of short videos to teach you how to do a huge range of things from like Excel, which I use it for a lot, to business presentations, anything like that. There's a really long list of subjects that it covers. But what I really like about it is that they're all broken down piecemeal. So each one has like a course. And then within that course, you have these short videos. Usually they're like a minute and a half, maybe 5 minutes. It comes with a transcript of the whole thing. So if you don't have time to watch the video, you can just gaze through the transcript, copy whatever you need out of it and use that. I think it's just very convenient. And of course, it's nice that it's free.
And again, I think to me that the idea that you can go at your own pace,
yes,
I think that's
exactly
a really important
around
thing.
And you can very clearly see like what videos are about what. So you can skip down to exactly what you want to get at and get that information.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, so how do you stay on top of all this technology? Mm-hmm. Certainly things with, phones and all that, but the databases and all of that, how do you stay on top?
A lot of ways. You kind of have to have your ear to the ground a bit. So Twitter, listservs, there are some websites for like a lot of different subjects. So if I want to know, like, what are the best tablets, I'll go to, like, those type of websites and things like that. So, yeah, I just poke around a lot on the internet.
That's great. Well, and all of the ones that you talked about today are available. People can access those right through our website. Is that right? Just they can go right to our cattle.org and click on the research and learn tab and get more information that way about them.
And whatever they want to know, it's listed by, like, the subject. So if they're interested in computers or if they need school prep, they can find that right on the side, on the left side tab.
And especially as school is underway now for a new season, this is there are many, many good educational opportunities out there for students and learners of all ages.
Exactly.
Great. Courtney, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for the insight into all the cool stuff Cattle has to offer. Check out these great resources on our website. You can click on the Back to the Books homepage banner and get all the information about the stuff Courtney talked about today. And we'll be back here on the Cattlecast.
RB Digital is a service that allows you to download magazines like Highlights, 17, HGTV, and Forbes for free with a library card. Capital Area District Libraries. Everything right here.
And we're back. There's no better place than the library to raise a reader. And now we're here talking with Cattle Foster Head Librarian Jean Boley. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good to see you.
Good.
So we have a little history together that you were actually the one that hired me many years ago.
Many years ago, yes.
So thank you for that. It's good to be back together again. So tell us just a little bit about yourself and your background with storytelling.
Well, I worked for the Lansing Public Library before Cattle came around, so that's when I hired Mark. I got into storytelling kind of by accident and discovered I loved it. I loved listening to the stories, and then I discovered the power of being the one telling the story and having the rapt audience in front of you. And storytelling is another branch of literacy because you take in what you hear and you have to interpret it. So that's another skill in the literacy toolbox.
Well, and it's not just, you know, picking up a book and reading it to kids. I mean, that could be one part of it, but yours is much more in depth than you even have your master's degree
I
in
do.
Storytelling. That's
from
quite
East
an
Tennessee State University. Yeah, when you, especially with a large group of people, a book acts kind of as a barrier between the person presenting and the audience. But when you're telling the story, you can look at each person in the audience, and a good storyteller makes you feel like in a group of 3,000, they're telling just to you. So that's a very powerful thing and draws the audience in. A lot of the stories that I and other storytellers tell may be folktales that can now be found in books. They didn't used to be able to be found in books. But still, every time you tell the story, something might change just because of the way the audience reacts. So it's a living thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, and while we're going to be talking about, you know, raising readers, storytelling is something that can appeal and does appeal to all different ages. It's not just young children that get into this.
Right. Adults often think storytelling is for children, but once they experience it, they are as enthusiastic about listening as kids. And originally, the stories weren't meant for the children. If they were really good, they were allowed to listen, but storytelling was for the adults. So.
Interesting. Well, and so you continue to do that in your job now as the head of Cattle's Foster Branch. Tell us a little bit about what that job entails in addition to storytelling.
Well, Foster's a very small branch, so being the head librarian means you do everything. I work the circ desk. I'm a children's librarian at heart, so I do two of our three story times. Schedule the staff. I have great staff, so a little bit of everything.
Yeah, and a nice branch, too. That's, people love coming in there, I know that. So, well, let's talk a little bit about how Cattle can help parents raise a reader. And one of the things that I've learned over the years in conjunction with the Early Childhood Literacy Coalition that we've been a part of is that some of these things parents are probably already doing and maybe don't even realize it. And I know there was a concern a number of years ago that we didn't want to come in as kind of the experts and say, well, you know, you have to do this and you have to do this, because the pressure, especially for young parents, was kind of like, it could be considered overwhelming. And that as people learned about some of the different practices and good ideas, they realized that they were things that in some cases that they were already doing. So that was encouraging too. But
right. It's just a matter maybe of being aware of what you're doing and why you're doing it. And the parent is the child's first teacher. But by that, we don't mean that they should be trying to teach their preschooler to read. A preschooler does not need and is not ready usually to learn to read. But by practicing the five practices, which are talking, reading, singing, playing, and writing, just in a playful way, the child develops these skills that when it is time for them to learn to read, makes it much, much easier for them.
Mm-hmm. And even the preparation for getting ready to go to school, even a preschool, this kind of stuff, that birth to five age is crucial.
Yeah. Yes, many studies have been done on children who've been read to when they were yet little, children whose parents talked to them all the time or sang with them or were able to take them even simple outings to the park or to a free museum, these type of things. Their vocabulary is so much higher than a child who didn't have these experiences, and that's a gap that is really hard to make up once the child gets into school. Mm-hmm. And reading, Cattle will give you 50 books at a shot to take home and read to your child. And talking is very important as well, but when you read to a child, they're hearing words that we don't use in everyday language. They will be words that aren't above the child's comprehension. They can figure it out from the context in the pictures, but they're just words that we don't use in our everyday conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So that improves vocabulary as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and even things you talked about, like, you know, going to the park, you know, I remember learning that, you know, you could help children read the road signs and recognize what a stop sign looks like, and that's the color red, and, you know, the letters and that sort of thing, and how those are just out in everyday world and in the community, and, you know, you get to the park and you hear the birds and you see the squirrel and, you know, what sound do they make, and all of those kind of just everyday moments can be learning moments.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And now Cattle has installed story walks in several parks around the county, so that is another opportunity. These are actual picture books that have been taken apart and stationed around the park. So as you walk from place to place, you stop and you read another part of the story and can talk about what you're seeing along the way. So that's just another little tool, game, thing that brings reading and literacy into everyday life.
Right. And Cattle has what are called the Raising Reader Backpacks. Tell us what those are.
Oh, those are very popular. I don't even know how many we have anymore, but they're a little backpack that usually has 3 to 4 books, oftentimes, usually a CD, occasionally a DVD, but often a CD, and some sort of game, and they're on a theme, like weather or animals, dogs, cats, whatever, and those things go together. They're a little page of hints of activities that you can do with things in the backpack, and they can be checked out at no cost to a family to take home, and the child gets to read some books and have a different toy to play with for a couple weeks, and again, at no cost to the parent.
And a kind of an extra, it's a novelty for the kids especially, too. I mean, to literally get a backpack that, you know, maybe they can carry with them and not only get the books, but the other stuff that goes along with it. That's a fun activity.
And it makes it easy for the parent to come up with new ways of using these books and things with the child, because there's things right in there. Lots of times it'll include some finger plays that they might remember from when they were young. I know when my kids were little, I would start singing them songs, and after the first 3 lines, I couldn't remember the words anymore. So these CDs of familiar songs will refresh your memory on that, too.
No, absolutely. Well, so what other kinds of things does Cattle offer? I mean, the backpacks are good. You mentioned the story walks. But you know, just coming into the library, I guess that alone could be an important thing to do.
Lots of our libraries have some manipulatives for kids to use. There's some of the larger libraries have train sets, which are very popular. At Foster, we have a lot of puzzles. Mm-hmm. Puzzles are a good thing for children to use. Mm-hmm. And of course, all of our libraries offer story times for various age groups. You can't have too many people reading to your child. So when they come to a story time and the library staff is reading to them, they will also include songs or finger plays. Sometimes there's a craft involved. So they get another voice, another perspective. So many children's books are written with rhyming text, Rhyming is an extremely important skill for literacy. Mm-hmm. You don't realize it, but it helps the child to recognize that words are made up of little bits of sound and that they can be put together in different ways. So lots of times we'll do rhyming games. We'll read the part of the story and see if they can come up with the rhyme that fits in that mm-hmm. next word. So we're happy to help in that way as well.
One thing that I remember learning from you many years ago, you talked about, you know, there's puzzles and things like that. And some parents might come in and say, oh, well, geez, the library has toys. Is that appropriate? Shouldn't the library just be about books? And your response years ago was, if a child has a great experience coming into the library at age 3, 4, 5, they will remember that. And then little by little, they'll start getting into the books. It might be picture books to start out with. It'll eventually work their way up. Maybe by the time they're in college, they'll need to do some research and they can come back for that, or the computers or whatever. But just having that positive experience in a library is such an important thing. And you can start that at such an early age, too.
Absolutely. And really, children learn by playing. Little children learn by playing. They will narrate what they're doing, which is a good skill. They'll ask questions about what's this, or they'll use their imaginations and make things up. So playing is, it's not wasted time for a child. It's actually very important learning time for a child.
Absolutely. Jean Boley, thank you for joining us today, and we'll continue right here on the CattleCast. And that's music from Tonks and the Aurors, who will be part of our Fall Fest, which we'll talk about later. But first, let's meet Jolie Hamlin, Senior Associate Director for Cattle. Hi, Jolie.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I have been a librarian for 25 years, as crazy as that sounds to me still. I still feel like I'm in my 20s. I have worked at just about every kind of library, academic library association, the state library, special library. I have been with Cattle now going on 15 years, which also seems crazy. Started here as a sub after I had my second child. I was kind of staying home for a little bit, then worked part-time, and then moved into a branch head at the Holt Delhi Library, and then into this position ultimately.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Well, that's great, because you bring a lot of experience, not just in libraries, but even within Cattle, too, right?
I do.
So tell us about your duties as Senior Associate Director.
Okay. I sometimes feel like it's sort of a jack of all trades. There's a lot of different things that I do. The programming sort of ultimately reports to me. We have 13 branches throughout Cattle, and all of the branches have like a budget and their own character and do a lot of their own programming. But we also have some efforts that we do centrally, and I manage those budgets and those efforts. I work with staff training and staff development, the community outreach department, on the mobile library. Ultimately, those report to me also. And just anything that relates to public service, which as a public library is a lot.
And then after lunch, you...
Well, superpowers.
Yeah.
Librarian
well, you mentioned some, you know, programming and stuff like that. And Cattle has, I think, has a long reputation for offering really high-quality programs for all ages, ranging from great programs for children in the summertime to great author visits.
Yes.
And speaking of authors, we have a bunch of authors that will be coming to Cattle this fall, right?
We do. We have a lot of authors this fall. A lot of them have either a Michigan connection or focus somehow, which is sort of cool.
Yeah.
We have Kat Tedson, who wrote Haunted Travels of Michigan. She will be talking about some paranormal activities and things that she's studied over the years.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be at our South Lansing and our Weberville branches this fall. We have Jonathan Rand coming. He is just ever a favorite. We've had him the last few years in the fall. He's famous for his American Chillers and his Michigan Chillers series, and
right.
he will be at the Downtown Lansing branch later in the fall.
And I remember that one of those first times he was here, how incredibly popular.
He's so popular, and he's like a very dynamic sort of crazy speaker. The kids just love visiting him. We have Ruth Behar, who is a professor at the University of Michigan. We're celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month with her visit. She'll be at the South Lansing Branch September 27th. She's a first-time juvenile novelist. She wrote a book called Lucky Broken Girl. This is semi-autobiographical. Ruth is a Cuban-American immigrant. When her family arrived in New York when she was a small child, she suffered a hideous accident and was basically bedridden for the first year that she was in the United States. Mm-hmm. And she talks about that year, that influence of both an immigrant story and this tragic accident.
Yes.
Just both worked for her to like adapt and mm-hmm. become who she was today. We have an author by the name of Shenandoah Cefalo who she writes a memoir. It's called Garbage Bag Suitcase. She is, again, from Michigan, and she, I don't think it's wrong to say that she survived the foster care system in her case, and she tells that story, how she, as an adult, has thrived, but it's a very heart-wrenching sort of tale, and she'll be at our Holt branch in November.
Mm-hmm. And in addition to the great authors, our one book event is going to be returning next year,
yes.
I understand, right? So tell us a little bit about it and how our patrons can help with that.
Okay, well, we're super excited about this. It's the return of our Capital Area Reads, which has been on not quite a 10-year hiatus. This year, we're reintroducing it, but we're adding a fun component where patrons are actually able to participate in picking the final choice. So we have four finalists, and they are The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, Reading with Patrick, A Teacher, A Student, and A Life-Changing Friendship, Fortunes by Peter Ho Davies. The last one is Behold the Dreamers by Imbolo Mabu. The open voting period, it's all online voting, is from September 15th through September 30th. If you go to our website, cattle.org, you won't be able to miss like the banners and the information on how to vote. And we're just super excited to have that. Our patrons are able to participate in
yes.
making that selection.
Oh, absolutely.
And then there'll be a winter and early spring where we are reading this as a community, a focus in our book groups and programming, culminating in a visit with the author towards the end of April or beginning of May.
Mm-hmm. Great return to Cattle to have that one book series back. That's great.
Yeah.
Talk to us about Fall Fest.
Okay. The Tonks and the Aurors, it's just funny, like when you can tell if people have read Harry Potter or not, because if people have read Harry Potter and are Harry Potter fans,
they know
right away that this
right.
is a reference to the Harry Potter books, but other people who maybe haven't are like,
right.
now what's that?
Yes,
so,
right.
It's a fun tie-in. But that is an event on September 29th, sponsored by our Williamston Library, but it will actually be hosted at McCormick Park in Williamston. There's a band shell there.
Mm-hmm.
The Tonks and Aurors play a lot of Harry Potter sort of themed music. We will have scavenger hunts, crafts, food, fun. All ages are welcome. I do encourage people, because there is not anything but lawn seating there, that bring a blanket, bring lawn chairs. It's rain or shine, we're going to have the event. Everyone in our community is invited.
Yes, well, and such a huge popular series of books and
right.
movies and all of that, and
right.
celebrating is it the 20th anniversary, I think, this year of the first book, maybe? Something like that. It's
somewhere
in that range.
That sounds about right.
It's
right for the first time.
Hard to imagine that's already on to another generation or two, but
yes,
really popular.
It is.
So for more information about any of the events that Jolie talked about, you can pick up a copy of our fall guide at any of our branches or visit cattle.org/events. Jolie, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me today, Mark.
We look forward to all the fun ahead.
Yay.
The most memorable feature of the song Something might be its opening.
Something in the way.
This particular pattern of chords is striking, but before George Harrison used this cadence in Something, he used it 4 years earlier to open You Like Me Too Much. The two are not identical. They're in different keys and use different notes and different tempos, but their cadences are identical.
Something.
This is Jessica Trotter for Cattlecast, and what you were just listening to is a Beatles Minute from our guest, Beatles researcher Aaron Kudovich. Welcome to Cattlecast.
Thanks for having me.
You are a Beatles researcher. How did you get into the Beatles?
Yes, that's the question I get every single day of my life, it seems like. But my dad got me into it. I'm a second-generation fan. And my dad, of course, was a first-generation fan. And so he grew up listening to the Beatles, and I grew up listening to them through him. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to college, I came back to the music that I grew up with, but with more educated and musically experienced ears. And when I was in grad school, I applied for and won a research grant to study the Beatles, not just to be a fan and listen and like right. the music and sing along, but to really dig into it and break it apart and analyze it and figure out what's exactly going on musically that makes the song so compelling. And so I won this research grant in 2011 from the University of Hartford in Connecticut, where I was okay. a grad student at the time. And since then, I've turned it into a career. In June of 2015, I quit all my jobs so I could pursue Beatles scholarship on a full-time basis.
And you're presenting all over the place, and you have a number of titles mm-hmm. for sale as well. You have a book called From the Shadow of JFK, which takes a different tact than some researchers when looking at JFK and the Beatles.
Yes, there's much debate on whether or not Kennedy's death and the rise of Beatlemania are correlated. Did one help cause the other, or is it just pure coincidence that these two events happened 3 or 4 months apart? Mm-hmm. And I'm of the opinion that Kennedy's death did contribute to the rise of Beatlemania. And my logic is that Kennedy was very much a leader of youth culture. He resonated with young people in a way that no American president before him had. Sure. And that's exactly what the Beatles did. Just a few years later, the Beatles are strongly youth-oriented. And so I would argue that Kennedy's life and death could hardly have better prepared the United States for the Beatles' arrival and success. But many people disagree with me. You can never prove you can never prove or disprove a relationship. Right. You just kind of have to look at the evidence and decide whether you find that evidence compelling or not. Many people, myself included, do, but many people don't.
You also have a new title out.
Certainly. The most recent book is called Flipside Beatles, and the title's a bit of a pun because most Beatles experts and authors are experts on history and biography. And what I do is analyze the music itself. The musical side of the Beatles, I kind of consider the flip side of Beatles research and scholarship. And so most of what I do is designed for, you know, is looking at the music. It's looking at song structures and chord progressions and cadences and melodies and all these musical components and how they all fit together to create an entire song. And so Flipside Beatles is much like a vinyl record. You read the A side, just like you would a normal book. Then you flip the book over, and you read the B side. So it's actually two books in one. It's two transcripts of two of my more popular presentations. So the A side is called The Beatles Band of the 60s, and it's an overview of Beatles history and music from their breakthrough in 1960 through their break up in 1970. The B side then is called Star Time, a Celebration of Ringo, because Ringo gets no love, and he deserves a lot of love. And so I look, I take four parts. I look at his personality, I look at his drumming, his singing, and his songwriting, and how all four of those things contributed greatly to the Beatles as a whole.
Okay, and I know this is a podcast, but the layout of this book is really quite neat.
Yeah, I wish I could show you. Maybe you can use a picture somehow. But the cover, both covers, they look like vinyl records. So the Beatles company Apple, that when they would produce their albums, they would put a label on the A side of a green apple. And then on the B side, they would cut the apple in half. So you get the sliced apple on the B side. And that's what I've done with my book. The A side has a green apple. Note, it's not the official apple because then I'd get sued.
And how can people get a hold of your titles?
The easiest way is through Amazon. All of my titles are available for purchase on Amazon.com. You can also find more information on my website, which is AaronKrerowicz aaronbeatles.com. But that's a bit of a mouthful, so it's probably easier if you just search online Aaron Beatles.
What are you listening to? What kind of music do you listen to? You're a big Beatles fan, but what else do you listen to?
Yes, but I hardly ever listen to the Beatles for pleasure anymore. I mean, I did when I was a kid, but sure. I just listen to it so much that I don't
it
really feel...
It is work now, too.
Yeah, well, it is also work. So I'm much more inclined to turn on like the local hip-hop or country station than I to actually turn on the Beatles. That's what I was listening to on my drive-in today was the local country station.
Aaron Kudovich, thank you for stepping in with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Christy Schichtel is an outreach specialist at the Center for Service Learning and Civic Engagement at Michigan State University. Hi, Christy. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for inviting us here.
So tell us about your position at Michigan State University. What does that actually entail?
Yeah, great question. I would say I'm a professional matchmaker. So, So instead of putting together people like romantic interests, we're helping students who are interested in being engaged in the community find organizations that are looking to have MSU students volunteer. And similarly, organizations will come to our office and ask, hey, how can we find some energized, excited, skilled MSU students?
Okay. And for those that don't know, tell us a little bit about what is the Center for Service Learning and Civic Engagement, and what's the organization's overall mission?
Yeah, so our overall mission is to prepare students to act with civic responsibility in the community, so while they're students, but also beyond. So students who care about communities, who care about community issues, want to make change. And so how we help them do that is we help them get connected through various volunteer opportunities. We do days of service, which involve hundreds of students getting involved on key days in the Lansing area, all kinds of programs getting students involved. And then we also support classes that will require their students to do some type of community engagement.
Okay. And so really, it's a very broad range of not only just locations, but different activities and things like that within the community.
Yeah, right? Definitely. Yeah. So we're primarily focused on getting students involved in the Lansing area, but we've started working on partnerships in Flint and Detroit, and also some global partnerships as well. So, you know, we're expanding always.
Yeah. About how many students volunteer in a typical school year?
That's a really great question, and we ask the college that, so we send out a survey each year to get a sense of, because we don't run all the programs. Mm-hmm. MSU is very service-oriented, and so it's happening in the veterinary med programs, the nursing programs. Pretty much no matter what your major is or college you study at MSU, there's some type of service initiative. And mm-hmm. so in the past year, when asking campus, faculty, staff, and students, you know, what kinds of engagement has happened, numbers have rolled in at higher than 30,000 students.
Wow.
So, you know, when we say it's spread all over, it's, I mean, that's more than half the student population.
Yeah, that's really amazing. Give us some examples of some of the types of learning that are available to the students and how they may participate in different ways.
So I mentioned our days of service, which is really an entree into getting involved in the community. So we work with probably between 150 and 200 organizations in the area, and we ask them how could you use student volunteers. So whether that's on a single day for a couple hours, maybe you need someone helping with your programs, we kind of range and turn to community organizations on what they need and then helping fill their needs with students who are hopefully eager and excited.
Mm-hmm. And they could help out in many, many different ways. I mean,
definitely see students helping out with office support, tend to be more excited about any time they can interact with community members. So they love mm-hmm. doing youth programming, you know, helping out with after school programs,
right.
Tutoring, touring, Boys and Girls Club programming. So full range. And then we do see students, after they have a handle on things more, starting to take off in, you know, fundraising for organizations or planning
right.
events.
Okay. And it really probably helps, I mean, not only the agency itself, but the students get really a lot of knowledge and education by participating in these things. It's
Yeah, definitely.
Well, you mentioned tutoring a minute ago, and CATL has been fortunate to partner with MSU Service Learning for a number of years. And one of the things that we've done over the years is to have what we call the free homework help, kind of tutoring for students in grades K through 12. Explain to us a little bit about how that process works. How do the students learn about it, and how do they participate in the homework?
Yeah, so we have worked with quite a few CATL branches over the years. I'm rather new to MSU, so I've been working in our office for about 3 years. Often our students who are doing this as part of a class, full range of topics. And our students, so they're often in a general education course or a teacher education course. Mm-hmm. So we get a full range of students also who I would say they're most of them on the younger end as well, so freshmen and sophomores. Mm-hmm. For them to interact with all kinds of different groups, whoever comes to the library, you know, we've had students say, like, I've been able to tutor students who are from different countries mm-hmm. or might have a migrant family background or whatever. So whomever comes in, they see the full spectrum of the community. And so I think they really appreciate that learning aspect.
No, absolutely. And you, some of them do get credit for doing this, and some are doing it just as strictly as a volunteer.
Yes, right? Exactly. Okay. So I would say most of the students that end up coming to the library are doing it as part of a course. And so it's their task to say, okay, you know, the library's having me help with this homework help program. How does this connect with my class I'm taking? So if I'm taking a general education course on social inequality, which is one of the courses, mm-hmm. you know, how is this a service that's trying to close the gaps of social inequalities in the community? So the students have the work of making that connection between, okay, what am I learning? What am I seeing in the real world? Mm-hmm. This is the real world application. So it's no longer theories and research. It's like, what? It's okay, how does this affect people's lives? Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think they're very excited about seeing that practical application.
Have you ever talked to any students, you know, who have come back, been a part of the program for a time, and, you know, say, wow, I really got a lot out of this, or this really helped in a way? And
yeah, it's almost like a mini internship. Yes, we definitely hear success stories from students. I remember, actually, I was with a student about a year ago, and we were doing a week of service in Costa Rica, and she felt, because of her communication skills, she was one of the students that ended up working more with a large international population at the library, and she said she felt like she could better communicate with people simply okay. from her experience. So we hear the, like, takeaways of these nuggets of skills that, you know, are life lessons. So, you know, she might not be a homework help person at a library in the future, but she's taking away something that will be helpful to her in her career.
It's a win-win.
Yeah, we definitely like to think so.
Yeah. Well, Christy, thank you for joining us today. And for more information about the free homework help that will soon be starting at some of the CATL branches, you can visit CATL.org and get the details on that.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us. Special thanks to our guests today and to our podcast production team of Trenton, Eli, and Jessica. For past podcasts or specific interviews, you can listen to them on demand anytime. Just go to the digital downloads tab at our website, cadl.org. Until next time, I'm Mark Bazita. Thanks for listening.